anyway, I have a team. David Harrington's here and provides technical wisdom, guidance. Laura Stiles, who's the project manager for our FACE program. And Hank is the safety engineer who goes out in the field and collects our vitality data. Lauren Joe, a CSDE fellow, who I thank for the data that you're going to see here today. And Jim Raggi, who knows everything about machines and equipment and is our guru when it comes to understanding how things work. So our team really represents all the disciplines that I think it actually takes to do this kind of a program. So I want to thank everybody for helping me. I have no relationships to disclose. This is such a funny term, by the way. Does anybody, I want to tell my wife this, but not those kind of relationships. I have no conflicts of interest. Okay. So I'm going to talk about the FACE program. Probably almost all of you know about the FACE program. It's been around since, I think, 1981 when NIOSH started it. And it's, to me, like an incredibly vital public health program to prevent deaths on the job. And so I want to thank my colleagues at NIOSH for starting this, running this, keeping it healthy. They have a great website where you can get a lot of information. This is one of my, personally, one of my favorite prevention programs that NIOSH runs. And I've been involved in this in California since 1992. And so, and Laura, I think, for about 15 of those years or something like that, forever. And so we have gone over every fatality investigation. And it's based on the Haddon matrix. So it's a really important concept. I think Dr. Haddon published this back in the 1960s. But it's based on the pre-event, event, and post-event factors. And so for every case, we really hone in, I think, most carefully on the pre-event factors for each of the fatalities that we investigate. And it's what I call really based on teachable moments. So Dr. Dong, I think you rightly point out that when you go to the FACE report and to the database, you can't easily abstract the kind of surveillance data. But what you can abstract are what I call lessons learned and teachable moments that are really, really widely used in my view. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I run across who at least use it in their classes for teaching and worker training. I call it the sentinel event or the teachable moment system, which I can't undervalue at all. NIOSH has, as I say, started this program, I think, in 81. And on their website, they say they perform investigations in 45 states. You can see that the red states, the only thing I like about this is someone decided to color code this according to the same political codes. So you can see the blue states where there are NIOSH FACE-funded FACE programs, and there are 9 of those. And there are red states that haven't had any FACE investigations done. So we got to get the Dakotas involved here, Nevada and Idaho, Louisiana. Maybe that's changed since I think this is about 3 years old. And you can see the green states are where the NIOSH Morgantown FACE program sends their investigators out and deploys, you know, from the mothership. And we've had the California FACE program since 1992. Laura designed this great logo that I have to show off, and we have a really nice, we have a lousy website. You can check our website, but Laura, as both Laura and I agree, we're really constrained by our IT people at the Department of Public Health. But all the information's there, at least. It's just not really great to find and easy to get to. So we focused on LA County, which is that red, although it was a blue county in the election last week. Yay, at least yay for us, and we elected a Democratic governor. And you can see that it's just one of 58 counties, but it has about a third of all the fatalities in California. And for resource limitations, we just have focused on LA County since 1992. And it has about the same, just to give you a snapshot, we're the 8th largest economy in the world. We're about a tenth of the population, about a tenth of the employment. There are 16 million workers. There are 800,000 establishments. There are about 800,000 work-related injuries and illnesses every year, $22 billion in workers' comp. I mean, everything is really, really big. So for resource purposes, we're down there in LA. And we think LA reasonably reflects the rest of the state, although it tends to be more industrialized. It has a much greater Hispanic population. We get data from multiple data sources, OSHA, coroner's offices, newspaper clippings, Cal OSHA, vital records. So I want to shift now that I've just given you a nutshell. So we've been collecting this data, and the focus of this is kind of like, how do we interpret the data, how do we investigate cases, and what is our prevention strategy, and what are the lessons learned? And for the last, this reflects 17 years of data from 92 to 2008, we've had 2,068 fatalities. And I think that we enumerate them really well. I mean, I think this is probably pretty close to the number of work-related fatalities. Unlike injuries or diseases, we find, I think, a lot of, we rely on the CFOI program also to give us all their cases, and I think I have confidence in the numerator. I think the denominator issue is really an important one, but you can see that the salient finding on this slide is that the total rate of injury of work-related fatalities has significantly declined since 1992. And if I overlaid, which I don't have, the national data, it looks pretty close. We're a little less than the national average, but the line looks about the same. So the overall rate has been declining. What I find is interesting is that if you look at the total minus the homicides in LA County, it's flat. And then if you look at the little numbers of some of our target endpoints like falls, transportation, and machine-related incidents, those are also flat. So another way of taking a look at this is just to put a regression line through there, and you can see that there's a significant decline in overall fatalities, but if you subtract out the homicides, it's exactly the same. So what that means to me is that our prevention efforts overall have failed, in a sense, because the rate has remained exactly the same. I can't take credit, although I'd like to take credit for the drop in work-related homicides. I think it's unrelated to occupational health prevention efforts. It's related to the three strikes and you're out law, you know, that we passed in California, that now we have the largest prison population in the nation, 185,000 prisoners, most of them from minor drug-related offenses, the aging of the population that's most likely to perpetrate a homicide, greater enforcement of the law, the drop in the use of crack cocaine. These are multiple factors that my injury colleagues have been tracking for many years, and I just think that we're seeing a drop in the number of people killed in 7-Eleven stores, convenience stores, restaurants, gas stations. There have been great guidelines put out on the prevention of work-related homicides by NIOSH and OSHA. I'd like to think that the employers have gotten the message and have implemented better alarm systems and visibility and lights and having more than one worker work at night. But I don't really, in my heart of hearts, do I think that's happened? No, I think it's largely a reflection of other trends. So I think we got some challenges still ahead here because that purple line is pretty flat. So LA County has a very large Hispanic population. I'm sorry, I don't have the proportion of Hispanics. It's well over 50% in LA County. California, 5 years ago, became a Caucasian minority state, if you add the Hispanics and the Hispanic population and the Asian population. So for the first time, I am a minority in California. I'm certainly that in LA County. So you can see the work-related fatality rates by ethnicity. And they're about twice as high overall in LA County for Hispanics and non-Hispanics. So that, I think, is still a major public health problem. And because of this, we've been focusing on Hispanic fatalities as an endpoint in LA County. Here's just another way, just a regression line. It's flat for Hispanics. It's dropping for non-Hispanics. So overall, I think that's another issue that we need to grapple with as a public health community, to look at more closely why that is and where we can intervene. Construction workers, not surprisingly, if you look at the right-hand column, have a seven-time greater overall rate of fatalities comparing construction and non-construction. So if you work in construction in LA County, you know, you're seven times as likely overall to die on the job. It's really striking. I haven't looked at other data sources. I'm not sure, maybe somebody would like to comment later on whether that's reflective of the national data. But it's really like remarkable to me that man, you know, construction still remains really risky. It's across the board. So, you know, you have a much greater chance of dying from a fall if you're a construction worker. Or being a construction worker confers a much greater risk of dying from a fall. Oh, here it is. Okay, so these are the construction workers. So 73% of construction workers in LA County are Hispanic. Big population. So we wanted to look at the proportion and the rates of Hispanic fatalities in construction. And you can see, okay, pay attention here, that the proportion of construction fatalities is greater among Hispanics than non-Hispanics, right? So that's proportion, okay, of the total. But look at the rate. And this was a surprise to me, actually. And for those of you, I hope nobody read our abstract, because our abstract for this was incorrect. When we went back and looked at this data, why do non-Hispanics have a significantly greater rate of construction fatalities than Hispanics? If I had to predict, I would have said that Hispanic construction workers are working in higher risk jobs, or they're poorly trained. They have all sorts of obstacles as to why I would hypothesize that they have differences in rates. You can see that these are three-year running averages. You can see that Hispanics have consistently lagged behind non-Hispanic workers since 1992. And if you draw a line through that, you see the same thing. Although the other interesting point is that, Dr. Dong, you showed this, I quickly caught it on your slide, that the rates among Hispanic construction workers are increasing in construction. And Lauren, who's analyzed this data, I said, just take a look at this. You asked Dr. Dong, is this true? Do we believe this? I think I do. I think I do believe this. So when we looked at, well, what about specific fatality types? Here's just one example. If you look at falls in construction by ethnicity, it looks the same, more or less. The lines, although the non-Hispanic line looks like it's going down, it's not a significant trend, but the trend for Hispanic is. So they are approaching each other. But I hope we have some opportunity for me to solicit feedback from all of you to give us some clues as to what we might look at as to the reasons. One at least is that we should look at specific occupational distribution between Hispanic and non-Hispanic workers. That maybe there's just some differences in the job titles or where people are working. So the conclusion from this information is the overall fatality rate is declining, but the fatality rate other than homicides is stable. The Hispanic overall fatality rate is higher, right? But the Hispanic construction fatality rate is lower, but increasing. Okay, so I want to shift now from data and some of what we have extracted from our data to focusing on the prevention targets and some thoughts to wrap up about the way we have thought about it and framed it and try to target the best interventions. First, and I give Laura credit for a couple of dozen face facts. They're not blue. We would never put out such a weird color, but this is the only color font that I could find that like made it look okay on this slide. I think we have 8 face facts in construction, and you can see the variety of investigations that we perform, from backing to crane operators to forklifts to electrocutions, seat belts, forklift rollovers, highway construction. So one thing you'll notice is that there's a multiplicity of different types of fatalities. And I think that's obvious, but it's a challenge because each one of these requires an intervention plan, dissemination plan, targeted thinking about where the most likely place is to intervene. And they're all different, actually. There's no common denominator here. People die for many different reasons under very different circumstances in construction. You can also see, and this is probably better for Laura to comment on, but what I noticed is that if you look at an old face fax, here, like seatbelts, was a relatively older one that we did. And it's really text heavy. It's kind of crammed. It has a lot more information about the two workers that died. And then if you look at a recent face fax, like the next one here, youth killed in forklift rollover, what should be done is very compressed. The text is it's much smaller. The title is bigger, the graphics are bigger. We've become a lot simpler and straightforward over the years with fewer pieces of information to bring home from our face facts. And I think that's just a whole nother discussion about communication and strategy of what is the message here. I mean, we could spend a whole session, I think, just looking at these and talking about messaging and getting some good thoughts. Laura hasn't seen this. I just made it up a couple of days ago. So I came up with three impact principles that I was thinking, okay, like what is it really that the three things that we do that kind of guide our work? One is that no blame. So we're really careful not to assign blame, particularly on the worker. So we use the word incident instead of accident, as I hope all of you do. We always look for the pre-incident and the environmental factors and not pinning the blame on the worker. We always think about who cares. And here's a tree, you know, I think of it as the tree falling in the forest problem. Here's a tree in the forest and it fell, and obviously if nobody was around to see it fall, you come across it and you really don't ever think about why it fell. And I think that fatalities are exactly like that. We've had 2,000 plus fatalities in LA County, and people only cared about a handful of those deaths. And the circumstances of why they cared about those handful of deaths, I think, are really interesting to think about and to try to figure out from a public health programmatic point of view of where and why and when we become involved. The third is we always think of change up, what I call change upstream. And here's a photo that I took of Island Pass this past summer on the John Muir Trail. And it's the most beautiful place I've ever been. It's south of Yosemite. I highly recommend going there. It clears the mind. It helps us refocus on our public health perspective. But it's like the source of all goodness. And it's like I always think, okay, I'm going up to Island Pass. What is it that I have to do, that we have to do, to find that reason, the primary reason why that worker died on the job? And that's, I think, really hard. And not all of them are obvious and have that, not all of them can we find an Island Pass. And we don't investigate those. We don't do anything with them. They fall in the forest, unfortunately, and nobody hears about them. So here's some examples of those teachable moments. This is not construction. Neither of these are construction. I'm not just using them as examples of how change happened from a fatality. And by the way, these I'm using names here because they were published in the newspaper and they were widely known by Californians. So ordinarily in our face investigations, we don't publish names. But Marie Isabel was 17 years old and pregnant, and she was pruning grapes in 95 degree heat. She had been employed on the job by a labor contractor for 3 days. She was actually working with her fiance next to her in the field. She collapsed in the heat during one of our July heat waves, and she wasn't taken to an ER because they didn't have an emergency plan. She was taken to a clinic who eventually sent her to an ER a few hours later, but by that time, it was too late. She had a core body temperature 108, and she died 2 days later with a three-month-old unborn child. Her death, along with many others in the field, caught the attention of our governor. The cynical side of me says it's because he was in a re-election campaign and needed that Latino vote. The public health side of me says that the United Farm Workers and others had made a really strong case for why we needed to protect our most vulnerable workers in the field. California passed the first First heat-related illness standard in the country to protect workers, particularly the most vulnerable farm workers, that requires heat, water, shade, and breaks. It's an imperfect standard. Workers have still died even after the standard was passed, but not as many. And it was largely because of Maria Isabel and other farm worker deaths that this happened. And so this was a teachable moment for our public health community. Sherry Sanjay was a 23-year-old pre-law student who was working in a university lab, a major public university in Southern California. And she was using a pyrophoric chemical which exploded when she was working over the Christmas holiday by herself on the floor with a graduate student down below who didn't know what to do, didn't know how to put her in a shower. And she died from 40% total body burns. And within a day, her death was all over the internet blog sites and was picked up by probably every chemistry graduate student in the country who got really pretty freaked out that this happened. And there are now really great comprehensive guidelines. They're not OSHA standards, they're not enforceable, but great guidelines on researchers working with these high-risk flammable chemicals in laboratories. So to finish up, what are the lessons learned? And for those of you who have been to my presentations before, I cannot resist using these iconic pictures of Tiny Tim and Scrooge. Tiny Tim the heart, Scrooge the head. And so data on the right, although I don't mean to insult you epidemiologists that you're Scrooges, but Tiny Tim on the left, crippled, and at the end of the movie, I have to get an image of the two walking away, so joining the two with public health triumph, telling a story, putting a face on face, getting the word out, I can't emphasize fast and simply, and identifying change agents that are pretty much never us. Sometimes they're us, but rarely they're us. They're other people, so thinking about who uses this information, how to get this data out into those people that can use it. Thank you.